If you could put a percentage on Mitch Marner signing an offer sheet in the next 48 hours, what percentage would you put on that?
I don't like doing the numbers, and the game is tough. The game is tough, boys. But I'd say it's more realistic now than it's ever been. Going into this, there's a few teams that have kind of kicked the tires, and it sounds like there's at least one that is very close to actually going through with this and presenting an offer sheet to Mitch Marner. Ultimately, you know, it's going to come down to what that offer is and if Mitch wants to accept it or not. But it sounds like this particular team is looking at its options today and deciding whether or not it wants to move forward with it. And we could certainly get some news later on today if it actually does happen and if this team actually presents it.
Yeah, and look, you just said it, but I need you to put it as perfectly plainly for the listeners as possible. We're talking about a team presenting an offer to Mitch Marner, not necessarily him signing it like Sebastian Aho did the other day. It's just a presentation.
Correct. Yes, and so they're gonna. It sounds like present this offer to Mitch Marner, and then you know he and Darren Ferris and their camp there are gonna have to decide if this is the direction they want to go in, or at the same time could turn around and say, you know what, it's just not enough, but we're willing to entertain this further if you're willing to kind of enhance that particular offer. At the same time, Mitch can also turn around and say, you know what, thanks, but no thanks. I want to focus on my time with the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's some talk that Montreal presented an offer sheet to Braden Point, as an example, before they went the Sebastian Aho route, and Braden Point told them no.
There you go. Exactly. So, like, I could present an offer to Rihanna, mm-hmm. for example, to fill in for George.
Yeah,
but she's got to agree to it. So, you know, a team presenting an offer sheet to Mitch Marner, who's an extraordinarily good player and had 92 points last year. Yeah, I know. I'm not surprised. He's a good hockey player. So that makes sense. Do you think there's any real chance, though, or have you heard anything that suggests there's a real chance he actually signs the thing?
If the offer is significant enough, if we're talking about a 7-year deal looking at about $12.5 million a season, then I think there's a legitimate shot that he would sign it, seriously consider it and sign it. Now, again, I don't know that for fact, but I would imagine an offer in that ballpark would certainly move the needle. He doesn't have to accept it right away. He can turn around, go back to the Leafs and say, hey, I've been presented this offer. Are you guys willing to match it? Are you willing to get to this neighborhood? And if so, let's keep going. Otherwise, I've got a tough decision to make. So there's still a lot of variables that are in play here. You know, there's some teams that are being speculated that might have, you know, the ability to move forward with this, whether it's the Islanders, there's some talk of Jersey or Columbus's names floating around, not necessarily with Mitch, but just out there from an RFA perspective. A lot of these teams have to take everything into account as to what direction they want to go in. And if Mitch Marner is the guy that they want to target, then they will make that determination and present it. Like I said, it sounds like one team is very close to going through with it. They're going to make that determination by the sounds of things today. And then that decision will be made. But he's not certainly the only player that's getting consideration. Patrick Laine with the Winnipeg Jets, another guy that a lot of teams are interested in and could go down the same road.
David, what is that number for Mitch Marner, AVV, that the Leafs cannot match based on their salary cap?
I think anything, and I don't think it'll get to north of $13 million by any stretch. But I think that's, you know, when you start talking about a number that high, then it makes things even that much more difficult, and I think they would probably look the other way. I don't expect it to get to that level. I think if again, realistically, if a number is coming in, it's probably going to be around 12 to 12 and a half, in and around that range, which would certainly put Mitch in a position to be one of, if not the highest paid player in the league right now. The top AAV out there is Connor McDavid at 12 and a half. So if you're in that ballpark, certainly puts them up there. And it's something that the Leafs are going to have to take a look at seriously and consider, can we fit this under the cap? Who else do we have to move in order to make that happen? Right now they have tons of flexibility with the 10% cap increase. They can put Nathan Horton on LTIR. You can do that during the offseason for players it sounds funny, but you need a doctor's note, or it's got to be proven that he's going to miss, or a player is going to miss at least the first 10 games of the regular season, and that would allow a team to put a player on LTIR during the offseason. So they have cap flexibility now to match just about anything if they want to. But when you get to the regular season, when that 10% gap disappears, then it gets more complicated. They would have to move out another body, and that's something that I'm sure they've already considered and have already evaluated. I think from the Leafs' perspective, it's all right. If Mitch is making $11 million, here's how it's going to affect our team. If he's making $12 million, here's how it's going to affect it, and so on and so on. So I'm sure they've counted for all the variables. I just obviously don't know specifically where that threshold is where they say, we might not be able to make it happen.
And to put actual numbers to things, the summer cap, like you said, you're allowed to go 10% over. The actual salary cap is 81.5 for the season. The summer salary cap, you can spend up to 89.65 million. So they do have a little bit of flexibility there. My next question is for George. George,
yep.
Do you think David is telling us everything he knows?
I think David might have an inkling of what that potential team for the Mitch Marner offer sheet is.
I want the team, David.
Spill the beans, Pagnotta. Spill them.
Who is the team?
There's a good chance I might know, but I won't be able to say. Just wouldn't be responsible of me to say.
Can you just give us Eastern or Western Conference?
I think most of the chatter across the board for a lot of the RFAs, and that includes Patrick Laine, as part of it. Most of the chatter that I've heard has come out of the East. Now there could be a team in the West that's kind of in on that. There's a lot of talk because of all the cap space that the Colorado Avalanche have, even though they need to get Mikko Rantanen locked up and they likely will sometime this month. They have a lot of cap flexibility. If they put out a pretty significant offer, 4 years times 12.5 for Artemi Panarin that ultimately was turned down. They certainly have the room to do it. It's going to be a matter of whether the Avs want to enter the RFA world, be it a Mitch Marner or a Patrick Laine or a Matthew Tkachuk for that matter.
Here, I'll try it a different way. Who is the team and why is it the New Jersey Devils?
They could be part of it. Like I said, the Devils are one of the teams that have been looking around and exploring the market. But yeah, unfortunately, guys, I wouldn't be able to say it right now. I think there's been some pretty good speculation out there as to what the team might be. But I just, unfortunately, I can't tell you.
He's the
not yet, anyway.
That's okay. He's the editor-in-chief of the Fourth Period and host on Sirius XM NHL Radio. David Pagnotta joining us here on Sportsnet today. It's Steve and George, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You mentioned Laine, you mentioned Marner. Is there anything new on Braden Point? Because if you look at the RFAs out there, and you mentioned that the Habs potentially wanted to offer G Braden Point but didn't want any business, is Braden Point going anywhere? And why hasn't there been a deal hammered out between the Lightning and Point yet? Because when you look at RFAs, to me, you can argue he's the best of the bunch.
Yeah, I mean, no, he's certainly up there. And the Canadians, like I said, they were very interested in him. But at this point, he appears to be telling teams that have inquired that he's focused on getting a deal done with Tampa. I'm not sure why there's a bit of a delay from that perspective. Maybe they've got a few other things that the Bolts are kind of working on at this stage. Maybe they're just saying, you know what, we're gonna take the week to relax, celebrate, Canada Day and the 4th of July and all that, and then get back to it. But Braden Point's made it pretty clear to a few teams that his focus is on getting a deal done with Tampa. And I guess from his perspective, it'll happen when it happens. But, there are other players, and I keep going back to Patrick Laine as this possibility. I can tell you for certain, if contract talks with the Winnipeg Jets don't progress at some point this month, he is 100% willing to explore all of his options. And that certainly includes entertaining offer sheets from other teams. And there are teams that have already kicked the tires. I don't know if they're there yet, if Laine's camp is there yet, because I don't think they're that far along in talks with respect to the Jets. But if there's another guy out there that I think is probably the most likeliest to receive an offer sheet and willing to consider it, obviously other than Aho and other than what's happening with this Marner situation, I think Patrick Laine is next in line.
David, what's the timeline on all these RFAs? When do we expect these guys to put pen to paper? Are we going into August? Are we going into training camp? There's still a lot of big names out there, no contracts to be found. What is the deadline? Is there anything? When do you expect things to really start moving on all of this?
I think at some point this month, things will start to ramp up with a lot of them. A lot of teams looked at what happened with the Maple Leafs and Willie Nylander last season and going into the season as something that they want to avoid and just don't want to get a part of and be a part of. So with that into account, I mean, obviously, you know, it's all a negotiation and you got to try to flex your muscle as much as you can. Some teams might be more willing to do that than others. But I suspect that at some point later this month, we're going to get a good sense as to what direction a lot of these guys are going to go in, whether it's Laine or Rantanen. Both of those guys are you know, back home, and their agents are going to Finland in a couple of weeks to sit down with them and figure out how they're going to be able to structure something or what their options are. You know, I get a good feeling that this month is kind of key. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, by this week or the end of the weekend, but it certainly sounds like they want to try to get something done and equated at some point this month so that they can focus on their summer and focus on, you know, training camp come September.
I wasn't surprised to see Aho get an offer sheet because there's so many great RFA names out there. It didn't have to be Mitch Marner. Like we were all talking about that for so long. I know you're saying that it's picked up some heat, but the name I expected it to be for a long time, and you just mentioned him, is Patrick Laine. With the other free agents, Laine has something that the other RFAs do not have, and that's a little element of doubt. Like I don't think there was any point in the season where anyone looked at Mitch Marner or Mikko Rantanen or Sebastian Aho and for a 10, 20, 30 game stretch said, wait a sec, this guy stinks. So Patrick Laine is a lethal player, 40 goal scorer. He had a disastrous season last season, still put up 25 goals and had a 5-point game. What would an offer sheet for him even look like? Would it be big money short term? Would it be long term? What's it look like?
I think with this case, you're looking at big money in any avenue, whether it's short or long. The comparable and perhaps starting point would be what happened with the Buffalo Sabres and Jeff Skinner. If you're looking at that type of a player and you're looking at him as you know, a lethal weapon, a guy that's going to put up 30, 40 goals consistently for you, well, the argument could be made that the starting point begins at $9 million a year. And because of his age, because Patrick Laine is 21 years old, you can go, yeah, we're, you know, seven, eight years at $9 million might have worked for a guy who's 26, but this guy's 21. You're probably looking at a 2-3 year deal that might start at $9 million. I think the number that they're probably looking at from Laine's side of things starts with a 10, and then you go and you go from there. If it's shorter, then yeah, maybe you're looking at something in the $9 million range. But that Jeff Skinner deal with Buffalo is absolutely a comparable and something that they're going to utilize in a negotiation. Take the 21-year-old versus 26 into account, and that's kind of where you're at.
David, we're all obsessed with the Maple Leafs cap situation here and what's going to happen with Mitch Marner, but is Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Winnipeg Jets in more cap hell than the Maple Leafs?
I mean, they can – it's tough. It's a tough position certainly to be in because not only do they have Patrick Laine they have to worry about, they have Kyle Connor as well. So you've got two elite players or two players that are just entering eliteness in the National Hockey League that you have to get locked up and you have to worry about. You absolutely do. So not only is it one guy, it's two guys. I mean, this is a scenario that Toronto wanted to avoid with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner at the same time. So they were able to obviously get Austin done in the middle of the year. They didn't want this scenario to happen, which is exactly what the Jets are in. It looks like from a financial perspective, they could probably get there, but it would put them right up against it. And I don't know that the Jets necessarily want to be in that position. So if a team comes at Laine, for example, and let's say hypothetical, they throw out $10.5 million a year for him, you're just under that max threshold. So the compensation is still two firsts, a second and a third versus four first round picks. You're just under that. But because of that cap number, it makes things pretty difficult for the management team and the ownership. I mean, ownership wise and dollar wise, they can spend that money all day. That's not the issue. It's because of the cap era that we're in. that boasts a bit of a problem. So they're going to have a significant question that they'd have to answer themselves if it gets to that point from an offer sheet perspective, or, you know, around $10.5 million for a Patrick Laine. Again, that's a hypothetical. I don't know if it's going to get to that point. But you know, certainly something for the Jets to think about, and certainly something that a lot of teams look at that and go, oh, I'm pretty happy I'm not in that boat.
With regard to all the RFAs, you know, what we sort of read before the silly season started, gotta love July when it comes to hockey. Before silly season started, it was all about hockey guys being very hockey and not wanting to make waves, and they wanted to see what the first shoe to drop was going to be. Who's going to be the first RFA to blink? Who's going to be the first RFA to sign a contract, and who's going to establish the market? Well, that's already happened with Sebastian Aho. You mentioned there's no specific date coming up, but my friend George here is very stressed out. He wants news to be spread out. He wants news to be spread out all throughout the month of July.
Throw us a bone.
Do you think this is actually going to spread out, or do you think this is going to happen fast and furious? We're going to see bang, 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 signing, signing, signing.
I expect most guys to get to that point later this month. I think that July is kind of the time frame that a lot of teams certainly are looking at, going, all right, we want to just get our house cleaned up and in order, so that we have some time to, you know, give us August. Let's get away from everything and relax, and get back to camps in September. Get back to wherever the team is, away from their off-season home. But again, all the numbers have to make sense, and you know, whether it's Marner or Kyle Connor or Matthew Tkachuk or somebody, it's you know, that they have to make that determination as to whether or not they want to hold out a little bit more, if it means that much to them, to generate additional dollars. So the goal, is my understanding anyway, across the board, is the goal is to figure things out this month and then give everybody peace of mind for, you know, at least a five week span. But it's going to come down to whether these teams can get to those points with those players, which, again, they'd like to, but, you know, there's a lot of things I'd like that I don't get. So we'll see how that kind of goes.
David, is there a chance that teams can work out a sign and trade? You talked about, because Mitch Marner could easily go to the Maple Leafs and say, I'm about to sign an offer sheet. Can you guys match this? Well, the Leafs can say, don't sign the offer sheet. How about we sign you to that deal, and then we'll flip you to that team to get a package that doesn't include four first round picks. Is that an avenue potentially some of these teams could go down?
It's certainly possible, absolutely, and it's you know, we know that the Montreal Canadiens reached out and tried to get a trade in order with Carolina before they offer, you know, they put out the offer sheet to Sebastian Aho, and obviously in the end everything didn't work for the Canadiens. So it's certainly possible, and it's something that teams have, I'm sure, have knocked on the door already with, you know, to Kyle Dubas and said, hey, we're thinking about this. Is there any consideration you'd give to move in the player rather than forcing your hand? How do we figure this out? That, you know, back in the late 90s and early 2000s, there was more of a trend to this, and not only from a offer sheet perspective, but even from a roster perspective. You know, there was one that I remember, the late 90s between Tampa and Philadelphia with regards to Chris Gratton. They, you know, Lightning offer sheet, you know, there, they allowed him to accept it, but they traded their four first-round picks back to Philly for a combination that included Mikael Renberg and Carl Dykhouse, I believe. So it's certainly in the realm of possibility. We just haven't seen that happen in, you know, ages, but it's certainly in the realm of possibility, and we already know teams have already inquired about that possibility. So, yeah, at the end of the day, certainly you can get to that level, but it's got to take a lot of creativity, because it's a little bit different than just coughing up the picks. Now you actually have to negotiate compensation. So it makes things a little more difficult, but certainly an avenue that teams can explore.
All right. This is the last time I'll say the actual term offer sheet. Are there any other names out there that you're hearing? Because Kyle Turris has been traded on Twitter like 1,000 times, but in real life he has not. There was only the one time, from Ottawa to Nashville. Jake Gardner still doesn't have a team. What else is going on out there that you're hearing?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned tourists. There's that chatter is going to pick up later on this month as well, because Nashville has to get their captain signed to an extension. Now, there's a lot more leeway there, and Roman Josi's got 1 year left on his deal. But that's another player that's going to command a pretty significant salary. You're looking at $9, $10 million range, even in a, you know, income tax-free state like Tennessee. So that's going to be, you know, once they get the ball rolling a little bit further there, and they're not there yet, you're going to start to hear the possibility of Kyle Turris being moved a little bit sooner. And they obviously don't have to do it because they got that year, but you're going to hear his name more. Calgary is still very much looking at trying to move James Neal, trying to move TJ Brody. So those are two players, obviously, you know, different positions. Brody's lefty, righty, and Neal had a horrible year last year based on his positioning. But the first time in his career, he scored less than 20 goals. So there's still a lot of teams that see him as an option. I know Edmonton has had some discussions with Calgary about James Neal. I don't know if it's going to get to that point. Jesse Puljujärvi is another guy, speaking of the Oilers, that a lot of teams are looking at as a possible trade option for them, because, you know, the writing's pretty much on the wall at that point with his future with the Edmonton Oilers. I know the Los Angeles Kings are one of the teams that have inquired, but I'm sure there's, you know, plenty more. We're probably going to be hearing that a little bit more as you know, the weeks kind of progress. And then, you know, even on a trade front, you know, as I mentioned, with offer sheets and RFAs, probably by the end of this month is when things will start to die down and everyone will kind of quiet in and get back to it when they can in September.